Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and I have a very inspiring guest. I first saw him, as some of you did, in the 90s with his infomercials. You may remember this.
Let's go. And you've probably seen me on Oprah, Larry King, or Letterman talking about government money programs. Well, my new book shows you 15,000 programs you can use to change your life.
Well, that's Matthew Lesko. He's become an icon that people have even parodied. They say they know you and make it when people parody you. But he's an inspiring figure to me and to many others. And we're going to have him share today with us. He gave a very inspiring talk to a group of young people about being yourself, just being who you are. And I know a lot of you creative people and business people listening in. This will be a really inspiring half hour or so. So we'll be back in about 20 seconds with the living legend, Matthew Lesko, the question mark man. Matthew Lesko, thrilled to have you on the show today. How are you?
I'm fine. I think I wish I was in, what are you, California?
Yeah, I'm in Southern California. Where are you back? You're back on the
Washington,
East Coast.
D.C. Yeah, Washington, D.C. It's cold as hell here. Got a, like, you know, single-digit wind chill factor. So it's
wow.
A good place not to be. Yeah.
Well,
your
legendary
maybe
question mark suits. What do you do in the winter? Because you still can't wear. Do you wear that open blazer in the winter?
Well, actually, I have an overcoat with question marks on it.
You do. You got an overcoat with question marks. That's great.
Cars have question marks on them and everything. But
that's fantastic.
I think maybe this cold wave is because of the election in Washington. You know, maybe that's what's going on.
talk about branding. I mean, you were branding with this question mark before people even were using the word branding.
Yeah. Right, because
amazing.
It wasn't to me. They asked me to come up to the Harvard Business School and talk about branding, you know. I was just bored. Yeah, it was just... something I always wanted to do, you know, no matter what I was or what it was going to become. You know, wearing question mark suits is, God, I don't know why it was in me since like 10 years old. But I didn't have the guts to do it till I was in my 50s. That's the problem.
Inspiring. That's inspiring because, you know, I'm 53 and we have listeners of all ages all over the world,
uh-huh.
But a lot of our listeners are baby boomers like me. So, you know, you reinvented yourself and why do you think you finally got the guts? Was it kind of getting to a point where, you know what, I'm 50, I don't care what people think, or what do you think made you finally
That's
do it?
That's part of that. You know, I think it really started in my 30s when nothing was working. I was in the Navy, in the war, so I wouldn't be drafted, you know, and came out, got an MBA in computers. Back in the 70s, I got a master's degree in computers, an MBA. You know, had a software company fail, and got another company that failed. And and I was doing it like they taught me. You know, everybody taught me, and I was going down the toilet. And then the third time, I said, God, you know, I was having a miserable time starting these businesses like everybody told me, and it was always failing. And then I said, well, this time I'm going to have fun. So screw it. I found out nobody gives a shit if you fail. That's what I used to worry about, was failing. And nobody cares. And so when I started, you know, just, I'm going to have fun, that's when it changed different. Yeah. You know? So
great example, Matthew, because, you know, there's that saying, you do what you love and the money will follow. Let me ask you this. Was there a startup period where you weren't making the money yet and you just had to take a leap of faith? Or how did you sustain or survive before it really hit? Because your infomercials blew up. But did you have some prudent reserves of money, or how did you do that?
No. Everything and I think it's easier to do now than ever before. You could be an Uber driver, you know, whatever. I would. My businesses were really service business, so I was selling, you know, my time. I was a researcher in Washington, you know, but my clients were Fortune 500 companies. You know, when you sell services, you go to the rich people. They're lazy. It's like the shoeshine business. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. They could do it themselves, but they're too lazy. They'd rather pay somebody.
Well, I tell you, you're an amazing story. And when you first came out, the books, I remember the books, they were really thick, like thick, you know, mule choking thick books.
Right.
And now, are you mainly online with the whole, internet revolution?
About 10 years ago, people stopped buying reference books. That's what I was selling there. So, which has been great. I have to learn a whole new business. And actually, I think what really happened, people stopped buying information. You know, look at all the old media that's going out of business. You know, Washington Post going out of business. You know, all these kinds of things. So it's learning that, but it's exciting to me because now, I mean, I just got to learn and reinvent myself. I figure I got 20, 30 more years in. You know, so the problem now in doing something in life, at least at my age, and maybe at your age too, you find if you had success in the past, you're trying to make that work again. And that ain't going to ever work again. The world is too different for anything that you were making money with last year to work next year. You know? And the more success you have, the harder it is to get over that. And
that's a really good point. Yeah, because you have that bar and you want to just – you know,
absolutely.
Compared to that,
I'd rather be
that.
a 25-year-old kid just out of school, no baggage they're driving around. They're just looking forward for opportunities. Yeah. You know? So their mind and vision is where it's forward. Where's the opportunity? What is the best thing to do? You know, that way. You know, when you're older, you have this success, and you're trying to fit that into what's going on now. And that's harder to do. Yeah. You know? And that's a handicap, I think, of success now, particularly now. I mean, our economy, everything is just upside down. Everybody's relearning everything. But that's the exciting part. There's no rules anymore. Everybody's faking it and invented it all over. That's why I think experts are worthless now. Man, nobody. Look at the smartest people in the world. Took the whole country down the toilet, you know, in 2007. And it's still the smartest people in the world, but Trump would never have a chance to be president. Look who's coming to town. Yeah.
Yeah, and all the pollsters that we thought were the experts missed the didn't predict what would happen with the election.
And that's why I think we still spend a lot of money on these people who are guessing. And the problem with experts, in my mind, is they're able to charge more if they can make you believe they know the answer, right? When they really don't. And when they go home and drink with their buddies, you know, they'll admit that. But it's hard to charge big fees to me. Hey, I don't know if this is going to work or not. You know, let's give it a shot. Fuck it. Yeah. And it's that's real life. Everybody, I've written 100 books, only 10 made money. So I know I'm wrong 90% of the time. And it's even worse now.
10 of them made money. That's it's almost like a great baseball player. You know, they're a great, I loved Roberto Clemente and made a movie about him.
Yeah.
But even someone as great as he was, he was only getting a hit 3 out of 10 times.
Yeah. See, I mean, this isn't what we think. There's somebody else has some magic. And the rest of the hucksters in town want you to believe that they have magic when they really don't. We're all struggling. And to me, it would be a hell of a lot better life if everybody admits, man, I don't know what I'm doing either. Hey, let's figure this out together. Yeah.
I love
Instead
that.
Of,
and that takes a lot of the pressure off.
Exactly. And it'd be more comforting and everything, and that pressure. And, we'd get rid of headaches and stress and everything. If we're all trying to solve the problem again, we all admit we really don't know and listen to each other versus just screaming, yeah. And
well,
that's
you have tremendous energy. When I saw you speak the live talk, you were like Mick Jagger going back and forth on that stage talking to young people. I mean, you were pacing back and forth, and you're in great, great shape. What's your key to stay so energetic? I mean, forgive me for asking, but you're probably 70 now, or
73. Yeah.
Well, you seem like you're 50, at least maybe 50 most. How do you keep that Energizer bunny
going? I think Mick Jagger is about my age too.
Yeah.
I think two things. Yeah, I was a short, fat kid growing up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah, man, it amazing. And I didn't start losing until I ran. Started running after the Navy. I was 30 pounds heavier.
Wow.
And running was the only thing I did, and I do it till this day. And back then, people say, you're not going to be able to run more than, you know, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. Man, I've been running for 50 years. I still, every morning, do 5 miles. You know? So that, but also the energy to me is find something you love to do and you think it's important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you don't think it's important for something, you know, why the hell are you going to get up? You know, so you're trying to make money to go on a ski trip or something. I mean, that stuff gets old. You know, I mean, it's nice maybe when you're younger. You know, when you're younger, I think at least maybe even older, I still have to fight it. How much am I really doing to impress somebody else? Not to help somebody else, but to impress somebody else. I'm bigger on the New York Times bestseller list than you are. I sell more books than you. I got a bigger car. I get it's that little, you know, ticker tape going inside our head, it seems, that controls us more than anything. And it's addictive too, and it's not satisfying as, you know, really helping somebody individually or whatever, or you know, solving a problem. God, I think there's the only important thing left in life really is to give. Now, what could be more selfish than that feeling of giving? Yeah.
And this is the time of year we think about that.
Yeah, it should.
And you encourage the young people to really give who they are, their unique gifts. You know, I was looking at a snowflake just like, you know, the other day, in a Christmas display, and I was thinking about how they told me when I was a kid every snowflake is unique, you know. And you know, what would you say to the young people that have the teachers and the parents and the friends saying, you know, you would make more money if you went into this field,
right,
even though they hate that field?
Right. Well, I know, I'm in a town like that. Every third person's a lawyer. They all hate what they're doing. Yeah.
What was that about the lawyer? I didn't quite hear that.
I said every third person in Washington, D.C. is a lawyer, and they all hate what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, in my zip code, these people making $1 million or whatever, the lawyers of this town, it's still hated. Man, that's terrible. Hey, but more, I think we're not giving enough, you know. And to me, the way to give a lot is to look with inside. I mean, you have to use both. I mean, there's no ultimate way to do anything. But I think we forgot about looking inside. We look outside for, have other people tell us what to do. And it's really, I think that outside info, just there should be a, you know, just something to consider, but not something to work on. And what we really have to work on more, I think, in our society, what we have inside. And really, because what's inside of us, what's unique about us, when I think the key word is weird. Whatever's weird about you is probably the best stuff you have. Because nobody else has it.
I love that. Whatever's weird about you is one of the best things about you.
Yeah, and that's what you could give the most. You could give it better than anybody else. Yeah, I mean, like me, I mean, you see the ants in my pants at 7 years old dancing around. I was like that in high school, but I was thrown out of high school because I couldn't sit still, you know.
Yeah, the teachers must have been frustrated because they have this curriculum and agenda, and you were probably bored out of your skull.
Absolutely. So I'd entertain people on jumping around. I thought my middle name was Sit Down. Sit down, let's go. Sit down, let's go. And if somebody took that, you know, and said, hey, you know, that's a gift, that's a talent, and you should develop that. It wasn't until I started using the media, or I became a teacher, tell you the truth. I was teaching computer science, and I realized I couldn't teach unless I kept the students awake. So if I made an ass on myself in the classroom, I could keep them awake and teach them something. And then I started writing books, and then I realized, hey, that's what media is about. The camera goes to the asshole, right?
And now, especially in this age of reality
right.
TV, I mean, you know, reality TV show about a normal functional family that doesn't have
exactly.
ants in their pants and just sits still.
Right.
And I mean, that would be the most boring show on earth, you know?
Exactly. That's right. Trump's got this down. When he first started out, I know it. I'd go on TV shows or talk show and just knew what they wanted. They didn't care what I said. It was how I said it. Yeah. They don't check. They don't do anything. They don't have time. They got to do the next 5 minutes, you know, the next show, whatever. And like he says one big foolish lie after another and just, oh, I'll dazzle you the next time. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, I was looking at the Republican primaries and, you know, I think George, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Jeb Bush spent something like $60 million plus in ads, paid advertising. And Trump just said and did outrageous things and spent, you know, a fraction, I think, under $1 million on ads.
Exactly.
But he was in the media all the time, and those other 16 guys were gone thinking, what just happened?
All right, that's right. He is teaching the rest of us what the world is about now. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need experts. If he hired all the best experts in the world about running a campaign, it would have been like Jeb Bush now, right?
Many times they say the person's toast, too, and they're not toast. I mean, there was like at least 20 times they said he was toast over things he said about John McCain or things he said about women.
Right.
And yeah, I remember the same thing with Bill Clinton in the 90s when he had the incident with Monica Lewinsky. And I remember for probably 2-3 days straight, nothing but the pundits saying he can't survive, he won't remain president. No one can, you know, Gary Hart was after something, was out of it when this happened. And, you know, and he survived it.
Yeah. That's why, to me, it's to get through that stuff in life. I mean, I really think life is terrible. It's so hard. It is. It's not easy for any of us, I don't think. Especially if you want to do something in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get through all that nonsense, I think you have to almost think that what you're working is sort of like bigger than you, so you could suffer through that, you know. Because
you know, that brings us with you. Does I'm sure you get the, you know, some people that criticize what you do or even parody. I had a guest on recently, a wonderful woman. She was the voice of one of the Peanuts characters as a kid, and she's in a comedy troupe with a guy that does a parody at his theater of you. I'm drawing a total blank now. Andy Dick. Andy Dick.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, so you don't mind it, huh?
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, he was really, he was falling all over the place saying, it's free, free, free.
Oh, he did me better than me. It was funny. No, I thought
so. That's
that
kind of a compliment, though. They say that you have really had an impact when they start parodying you on Saturday Night Live.
No,
you know,
I was
really,
Saturday Night Live did it. Used my image a couple times, and what's his name? The guy on the HBO from The Daily Show, the British guy.
Oh, you don't mean Jon Stewart, do you?
Yeah, no, not Jon Stewart. The other guy who left Stewart and started his HBO.
Oh, Colbert?
No. The British guy. What's his name?
Oh, man, I'm drawing a blank. John Oliver.
John Oliver, yeah. A couple times he dressed up like me, you know, and imitated me and stuff like that.
That's great.
Conan did it a couple times, used me. And yeah, I mean, it is, but it's not. See, all that is sort of like candy in life, you know, the things. So it's more to impress my friends and other people. And it's addictive, in a way.
And it actually increases your value. It makes you more valuable because people know, like, I went through a bad time in the 90s with some very bad press. And, you know, and it really was hurtful to me and my family for a while. But what ended up happening was what some of my friends called a Lindsay Lohan effect or a Paris Hilton effect, is that when you've been, people have written about you for allegedly bad behavior, that because there's so much coverage, you're now more valuable. So when you do anything good, you know, people write about you because they say, oh, this guy's had 100 articles written about him. I will, you know. And so it ends up like the Bible says, even the bad things can turn around for your good.
Yeah. No, I think so. And also the bad stuff in life, at least my life, things are really bad. I really learn most from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really, I mean, it's sort of, and that's why even like starting something or doing something, I mean, if it was easy, everything we decide to do is easy, I mean, that would be boring life. I mean, to me, I have in my mind the image, well, I could win a game if I play against a five-year-old, you know, something
yeah.
like that. Maybe.
Yeah, I live in Hollywood, Matthew, and I mean to tell you, every person I meet, it seems, that gives me, you know, gives you coffee at Starbucks, the waiter, the mechanic, I made a couple low-budget films, and it had some modest success. And so they're all giving me scripts. I have the script. But I, out of every 1,000 people that say they're going to make a movie, 1 in 1,000
yeah.
make it, because it's so hard to actually
yeah.
do it, you know?
All right. And that's why I think, you know, that digging inside yourself what you are best at, you find that, then that also gives you more stamina to stay long enough to figure it out. You know, I mean, look at even the good stuff that happens. I mean, it's how much is really brilliance there. It's really a lot of it. You know, you can't say 100% of anything anymore. Is because people just hung in there long enough, you know, to figure out. You know, like, why did I write 100 books only made money on 10? I wanted to do it so bad.
Yeah, it's
you know,
not quitting.
It was important.
It's not quitting.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. And you've been doing this since the 90s. Now, and you've also shift and reinvent yourself. I noticed that you really have done a great job with realizing online potential.
Oh,
I know,
yeah.
I saw a show you did with a fella that raised, I think, about 160 grand on one of the crowdfunding sites. So
yeah.
What are your thoughts about the whole online thing? You started off with the hardcovers. In fact, I had a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be my boss. I managed a music store for her. She was a wonderful lady, and she hit some very hard times financially. And she showed up my house selling encyclopedias back when my kids were little in the 90s. And I felt sorry for
wow.
her. I really didn't want
yeah.
or need the encyclopedias, but I bought all these encyclopedias because I knew it was going to like pay the rent for that month.
Right.
So I still got this huge stack of encyclopedias. And now they're outdated. You just Google
yeah.
or go on an online encyclopedia.
Absolutely.
But you've made this shift from selling the big reference books to – what are your thoughts on the crowdfunding, the Internet, all of that?
Well, that's as a source. I mean, to me, when I was selling Washington, D.C. government program, that's a source of tools, money, information, expertise for you to do what you want in life. Now I see – you know, how to use what's going on the Internet, crowdfunding, peer-to-peer, shared economy. They're another tools that, you know, anybody could do to, you know, do the things they want to do in life. I mean, it's turning everybody into a capitalist in a way. Anything you have, yeah, you have some extra time. Well, you get an app and say, oh, I'll just work an hour today and make some extra money. I got just sitting here doing nothing, you know. Like even, you know, I'm sure out in L.A., well, L.A.'s unique to me because that was always the gig economy. Everybody in L.A. for the last, you know, 30, 40 years that I've been going there has always been, you know, part of the gig economy where they just went from, you know, project to project, you know, as opposed to normal jobs. But now
what did you
I
say
think
economy,
the,
what was that word economy?
Gig, G-I-G, you know, like a
gig economy.
Musician.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary because, well
yeah.
you know, I have friends of mine in Pennsylvania where you and I are from, and they say to me, I could never live like you, Richard. I would be so scared. How in the hell do you not have a breakdown? It's like you're a
mm-hmm.
constant gambler hoping to win at the table.
Well,
you know
what? That is growing more than anything else in our country now. That all the things that are growing, I mean, you look at the hotel business, okay? So now with Airbnb is worth about 20 to 30 billion, depends who you talk to, but somewhere 20, 40 billion dollars. They've been around
wow.
for about six years. They only employ like 2,000-3,000 people. Okay, now what is 20 billion dollars? Hyatt Hotel is worth about 10. And they employ like 130,000 people. Yeah.
Wow, so Airbnb is worth twice what the Hyatt Hotel is
worth.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
at
incredible.
Least, probably three. Yeah. It's phenomenal in short years. So that's where the growth in our country's going.
So
but
I guess they make their money through taking a percentage of the
yes.
of the money that
all
people pay to stay at
the
these
website.
Places?
Yeah, but there's a million people making money off of that.
Mm. And my daughter, when she went to New York, that's how she found a place to stay. She
Absolutely.
Just got back from Europe. I mean, she goes on
right.
there and finds places for cheap.
Oh, yeah, I do too. I got an apartment down in Washington, D.C. I don't have it, and people throw money at it. And see what it's happened. See, you in the gig economy, you know, it is at least L.A. kind of thing. You're looking for who's when their next show is or whatever. But these are platforms where it's all together in one place. So I, for free, list my apartment on this Airbnb, cost me nothing. Millions of people are coming there every day looking for something. The Airbnb, you know, make sure I get paid, make sure the people are good, give me insurance, do all that nonsense.
That's
you know?
Nice. And they
yeah.
just take a small fee of
right,
the money
exactly.
that you get, maybe 3%
right, exactly.
or something.
Yeah, well, it's probably like 10. Yeah, yeah. But I don't have to pay ahead of time if I'm getting money, you know, when it's more money. And see, there's hundreds or even thousands like that, you know, mm. that are happening, that's happening. You can, you know, and see, you see all these storage places we have all over the country, you know. You know, store your junk here, you know,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. You know, they you know, charge $200 a month for a storage bin. Well, there's websites now. You just put, yeah, you could put your stuff down my basement for $50 a month. I'm not using it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is a way, God, I mean, like making money part-time. Okay, so you're a filmmaker. You know, or an actor, or whatever. You know, usually you have to get waiter jobs or something like that. And that person who wants you to be a waiter, they want you, you know, 5 o'clock every night to midnight, right?
Yeah.
So, but if you're an Uber driver, you sign up, you work whenever you want.
Yeah. Yeah, there's
yeah.
so many internet jobs like that. And also
yeah.
the money that you can make now for creative projects, which you've promoted crowdfunding. My last film about Roberto Clemente, my childhood hero in Pittsburgh, I got my pre-production money through Facebook friends. I put up on
wow.
Facebook. I got like 5,000
mm-hmm.
Facebook friends.
Oh,
they
great.
All sent me a few bucks. So I had like 15 grand or something.
Uh-huh.
And then I raised my production funds on Kickstarter. And the post-production funds, I did an Indiegogo or something. But,
yeah,
it was all online, and then I had complete creative control over the thing because
right.
I wasn't doing a conventional,
yeah.
you know, financing.
And
I mean, yeah, it was hard. I mean, it sure wasn't
and,
easy.
It, oh, yeah, nothing's easy.
Yeah, but
also
our film was in, you know, talked about in the LA Times and the Washington Post.
Wow.
And Pope Francis sent me a letter about it, you know. And this was all just done on my laptop, you know.
Yeah.
I edited it on my laptop on a
wow.
internet
yeah.
program I learned on my laptop.
See, there's, I mean, to me, the gatekeepers are gone. You know, books
yeah.
are the same way. Anybody could write a book. You know, anybody could have a store. That's amazing. I mean, when I was a kid in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, you want to have a store down in Wilkes-Barre, you know, you probably need, in today's dollars, like $250,000 to have a little shop.
Yeah, you had to go to the bank and get a big loan.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff. Or whatever. Man, for 20 cents, you have a store on the biggest
yeah.
mall in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go on
yeah,
eBay
on
or
Amazon or Etsy or all these things, yeah. That, wow. I mean, that's why it's just so much easier now to do that. And I think it's happening more. And people aren't taking care of employees anymore. So, you know, everybody hates what the hell they're doing. And,
yeah.
you know, big companies don't like employees. And so they treat them like hell. They seem to, the stock market goes up the more they fire, not hire. So it's, and to me, like a gig economy or, you know, whatever we call it now is if you have 3 or 4 clients, that's more secure than one boss who gets bought out by some company in Europe and don't like you anymore.
Yeah, the old economy promised security, but it was really a false promise. My uncles that worked, Pittsburgh, as you know, was a steel town. And
yeah.
Both my mom's brothers were steel workers, but my Uncle Ray, who was my godfather and growing up Catholic in Pittsburgh, your godfather pledges to take care of you, something helps
oh,
your
yeah.
dad. When my dad
yeah,
had
I'm
bipolar
Catholic, yeah.
and went to the hospital, he actually took care of
wow.
me. But he was a steel worker, and he kept telling me that they were going to take care of him when he reached you know, retirement
mm-hmm.
age. And they ended up losing his job and his benefits, and at retirement age, after busting his butt all those years,
yeah.
he was screwed, and he worked very low wages as a security guard. struggling and everything. And I thought, man, he sold his soul to that steel mill, and it
right.
never paid off.
Yeah. Nah, capitalism is cool. I sort of like it. It's a way to quantify if you're doing something of value, you know. Otherwise, we like doing stuff. But, you know, if you only like it, please, sort of like making love to yourself, you know, then try to make love to somebody else and please somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what capitalism, in my mind, as you know, you're making love to somebody else, so your talent. You know, they're rewarded with money if it's a value. But then the extremes happen. You know, that's all people working for, only that, you know, so we get tied up in that stuff, you know.
And before I forget, I want to let all of you know listening, lesko.com, L-E-S-K-O, is that the best place for people to?
Yeah, lesko.com is good. And I have a Lesko tutor, too, that I'm doing more there. Like, I'm doing more custom stuff back, and I really enjoy that because that's the way you learn. Is by actually helping people with problems. Like, man, a lady called me the other night, and she had really a housing situation, really bad. So, and she's in San Diego somewhere. And I just called her congressman's office in the local office in San Diego. They're on the phone, got a hold of somebody, and said, oh, yeah, I can handle those issues for them. So they don't even know. You could call your congressman's office and somebody will find you a government program. You don't even need me. And that's all the fat cats do it. They go to, you know, their elected officials to get money and, you know, benefits or whatever. Everybody's living off this thing. That's why all these, Washington's so important, because every fat cat's living off of it. You know? But the little guy can too, the problems you have, and learn how to use it. And that's why your congressman is. Because you're a vote. So you, if they get you 10 grand to do something or other, you'll vote for that sucker no matter what they do. And even though you're not a big donor or whatever, you're a voter, man. And that's how they stay in business. And see, trying to figure out the government, how it works, it's very complicated. I've been studying for 40 years or something like that, and I still don't know everything. But they don't have to. Because they're the only one in town that pay the bills. So you and I think we pay the bills of that bureaucracy in Washington, but they don't. It's the congressmen who vote on the budget for every agency. So every agency wants to please them more than they want to please you. So they have special phone lines and everything just for elected officials to call them, and they solve their problems really fast. So they're thought of nice on the Hill, and they'll get a bigger budget next year.
That's fantastic. Well, in our closing minutes, we went a little we have a few minutes, or give me a little more time. We had some questions come in. An actress here locally, Amanda, writes that she said there's a lot of fear of aging here in Hollywood. She says a lot of older actresses she knows gotten excessive plastic surgery. They're so afraid of aging, and she says she really likes your energy and that you're just keep going and not, you know, what would be your tips to the fear of aging or to staying vibrant, you know, as we pass middle age?
Yeah. I mean, it's finding passion in what you're doing professionally. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to be an actor or something and you don't have gigs, well, then it seems you've got to find a way. Okay, how can you do something with that, you know? Is it, where's a new market for that? What is growing? I mean, that's why I think now, when I was doing video 10, 20 years ago, and you know this too, because it cost you $1,000 for a couple hours to get a crew to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, anybody with a $500 camera is whatever. Now, just think, if you were acting, you could start a film, an acting school for Kickstarter projects. You know? I mean, there's millions of non-educated actors or whatever trying to, you know, do their little videos on Kickstarter or whatever it is. So, you know, what are the five principal rules of acting, you know, for your crowdfunding project?
Mm.
And That costs nothing to do. You could put it on platforms. You could do an e-book that costs nothing to do. You could be a consultant to be on platforms that could people call you up. You can, I mean, that's what I do. People call me up and, you know, it's sort of like, and they take care of the money and everything like that. So
yeah,
it just
seems like it's really shifted to where it's even better, because I have a friend of mine that's had a bunch of New York Times best-selling books that's been on my show, Frank Schaefer, and his last book, he went self-publishing through CreateSpace,
yeah.
And I had the same experience. I sold a novel to a publisher, but now I put my books through CreateSpace because I see the royalties, I see my percentage,
right.
And it used
exactly.
to be with distributors and people I sold my stuff to that I wasn't getting paid, and they're making all these deals to put it in
exactly.
all these stores. So it's almost
yeah.
better to do it yourself
absolutely.
Now.
I believe, yeah. And that industry, you know, the traditional stuff is shrinking, and the other stuff won't, you know, won't disappear, but it's shrinking, and it's more fun to be on something that's growing than something that's shrinking, you know, because then people are fighting for the crumbs when it's shrinking, and that gets, you know, people start acting weird when that happens, you know, but it's
yeah.
growing. And it was like me, I taught computer science in the 70s when I was studying computer science. I was getting my master's in at one school and teaching it at another school. And I was keeping the same courses. I was keeping my students a week behind what I was learning. You know, it's supply and demand. You know, that's why all these new growth areas just, you know, jump in. There's nothing to lose. I mean, it is. There's, I mean, you and I, you know, we're all smart enough to think of 30 reasons why something won't work. Who cares? That's why if you choose things that you think are fun, then you won. You already
yes.
won. If you think it's fun, why do something miserable and wait for a big payoff in 5 years, which probably won't happen anyway, and you're miserable for 5 years trying to make that happen, when, hey, I'm going to do this fun. This thing is fun. I don't know if I'll make money or not, but shit, I'm having fun. So...
Well,
you
I want to thank you,
payoff.
Matthew. You are such an inspiration, and this is one of those shows that people will share and re-listen to, because we all are seeking, you know, the resources to support ourselves and more success
yeah.
at what we do, and you've just given us a half hour of just tremendous inspiration. I mean, if everyone follows your example to find yourself, to find success by finding who you are, this world would be such a happier place. I want to thank you so much.
My pleasure. Remember one thing. I, too, am scared as hell and have no idea what I'm doing.
Well, that makes two of us.
Right.
That makes two of us. In fact, I remember one time I made this film that was it was a little short documentary. It was in the Academy Award competition. And I was about a famous female faith healer in the 20s, Amy Simple McPherson. But I went to New York to film her daughter. And I had 5 minutes to film her, and I had barely had any experience using a camera, so I flipped the thing on, and they had a screening for the Academy, and people started telling me about how my lighting was so brilliant, and could I speak at you know, the UCLA film school on what I did. And I was honest. I said, you know, that was just the way the lamp was in her room. I just turned the on switch on the camera. And if somebody said to me, you know, if you could have BS'd your way into
exactly.
them thinking you were like some genius, but I had no idea what I was doing.
Right. No, that's terrific. Yeah, that's
yeah.
a life exploring together. And that's why I think if people admit it, then it'll be a lot more comforting out there.
Yeah. Well, thanks. You've been such an inspiration. And everyone keep up with Matthew at lesko.com, L-E-S-K-O.com. And thank you for the question, Amanda. And Merry Christmas, Matthew, to you and yours back there
you
in D.C.
Same to you and your family back in Pittsburgh, too.
Oh, thank you. And you stay warm in that cold front.
Oh, will do. Run faster.
Okay. God bless you.
You.
Bye, Matthew.
Bye.
And thank you, everybody else, for listening to this inspiring time with the great Matthew Lesko, the question mark man. And Merry Christmas to all of you. And I do want to mention, by the way, and I'll be doing a show about this, the classic Rudolph claymation special. You know, the one with Hermie the Elf and the Rankin-Bass production about the Misfits. They're doing a live musical based on this at Thousand Oaks Coliseum Wednesday the 21st. My wife and I will be there. And I'm going to be having some of the actors from the production on the show. And it's just it's going to be a great, fun holiday show. And I want to support them. I love to support live theater. It's a nonprofit group doing this, and they're doing a great job. So that's Wednesday. You could Google Thousand Oaks Rudolph live musical, Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer. So Merry Christmas to all of you. And take Matthew's advice in the season of giving. One of the best gifts you can give is to give your unique talents and gifts to the world. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for tuning in. I'm so delighted to be doing the show, Richard Rossi Live, since 1991. We are so blessed to have all the wonderful celebrity guests that come on this program to try to encourage you. Find your success by finding you. Go with God and be blessed.